You're listening to Paranormal Portal on Revolver Podcasts. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Paranormal Portal Podcast. I'm your host, Brent Thomas, and I'm absolutely thrilled you guys are here with me and checking out the podcast. We really appreciate your support. Thank you to all the subscribers and the people who are leaving comments on iTunes. It's really cool. It's a great honor, and special thanks to Revolver Podcast for putting us out there. We're having a real ball with this. And if you want to keep up with the show, check us out on YouTube, youtube.com/paranormalportal. And you can see myself and Don and all the episodes we have up there. Lots of fun as well. And follow us on Facebook, if you would. Facebook.com/Paranormal Portal Radio. And on Twitter, at Paranormal Portal, but it's P-O-R-T-L. So there's no A-L on the end. It's just P-O-R-T-L. So Paranormal Portal. All right, ladies and gentlemen. But tonight I got a great show lined up for you. A wonderful man that I've just recently met, but we're becoming fast friends. I'm absolutely thrilled to have the opportunity to have him on the podcast as well. He's been on the other show on YouTube, and we had a great time and great conversation. But I'd like to welcome to the show Bigfoot researcher, Mr. Jerry Klein. Welcome to the show, Jerry.
Sup? Glad to have him on the show again.
Oh, thanks, brother. I mean, it's really, really a great pleasure. You know, I haven't known you for long, but I have followed your work. I know you've appeared on World Bigfoot Radio with Duke several times, and you've been on many other shows as well. But, I mean, you've really got some miles on your tires there as far as tracking the Bigfoot.
Yeah, a lot of miles.
So how did this all start for you, brother?
What's that?
How did this all start for you?
It's a plague. It started with me from the beginning. We got a gold claim in Gambier, Ohio, which is Fox County. And I was down there camping. Mm-hmm. And it was last weekend of August. I'd picked up an old trailer from some people that was moving to Arizona, and they'd just give it to me because I was helping them. They was friends of mine anyhow, and had a bunch of firewood, and it was a firewood hauler.
Okay.
I had my cargo trailer. It was a brand new trailer down there. I camped in and everything. I carried my gold equipment in there and my quad and everything else. And that night, I took the trailer home and was burning the wood out of that trailer so I could turn around and just sell the trailer. Didn't have no need for it. And was a nice, you know, had wood sides on it and everything to haul firewood with. But anyhow, I was burning the wood out of the back of that that trailer, and well, I was sitting there, it got to be about 1:30 in the morning, mm-hmm. and but no, none of those logs rolling off because I had it blazing, and I didn't want to roll off towards my cargo trailer because the fire pit was about 15 feet from the back of my cargo trailer.
Oh, wow.
So I was sitting there checking the fire, poking around at it and everything. And sorry, I'm being distracted here. Oh. I keep seeing people walk by my window here, and I just didn't know. I was going to start knocking on the door here while I'm in the middle of a podcast. Yeah. Must be kids out there walking. I see their shadows because the sun's coming right in the window here.
Oh, sure.
But anyhow, mm-hmm. so anyhow, didn't mean to mess up your podcast.
No, there. No, it's fine. This is a real life, brother. It always happens. Just roll with it.
Yep. So anyhow, I'm sitting there and I heard like a branch break, mm-hmm. like something onto a branch, but there's a high wall bank across the river from where we camp. And then I heard something come down through there and start splashing across the water, but it wasn't like a deer where you hear all four legs. But I, in back of my mind, I thought, you know, last week in August, I'm getting ready to go to another gold claim that we have for the GPAA, which was putting on gold rush days that following week, uh-huh. which was there on a Sunday. So it the gold claim, the OSPA gold claim where I was at in Gambier.
Okay.
And so anyhow, I heard the splashing come across the water. So I grabbed my flashlight. It's one of the big 6-volt, but with the LEDs in it.
Oh, sure.
Like the old, but newer now, but they still use the big 6-volt batteries in them. Mm-hmm. I picked it up and I just lit this guy right up. And as soon as I lit him up, he just dead stopped middle of the river. And we did a stare off. It seemed like 5 minutes was probably less than a half a minute, maybe at the most.
So what did you see exactly? Can you describe it?
Yeah, he was, very barrel chested, short hair. The light was illuminating through his hair to his skin, like on his knees and on his chest. Mm-hmm. He hair around his face, but not directly on his face. He didn't have mustache like the Patty type.
Okay.
The sagittal crest. He had the high eyebrow ridge, and he had a hooded nose, kind of like ours, but then it spread out. Mm. Kind of like umbrellas at the very end.
Wow.
And he stood there, and I had a light on him. He had his right leg forward and his left leg backwards, you know, in stride, more or less. Mm-hmm. And both come down, and his fingertips was just above his knees.
Wow.
And I keep saying he. Yeah, I could see his gender. Yeah, but sure. Anyhow, this is, you know, within a half a minute, you could really look something over, you know, really quick, you know, to determine this ain't somebody out there in a monkey gorilla suit, you know,
right.
Or gorilla suit. Mm-hmm. And then he turned his head away just slightly, but his eyes was glowing red. And then I could see they were just like an auburn or brown. Mm-hmm. And then he turned his head back just slightly back at me. And when he did, he went wah, like that and rolled his upper lip up. And I could see all his front teeth and all, because you're talking, this creature's 30 yards away from me, 30 yards standing in the middle of the river. Wow. And he had no canines. It was all block teeth like ours. And so when he did that, I jumped up, run into my trailer, cargo trailer, which there's a aluminum frame door there, mm-hmm. on the cargo trailer. And when I stepped up in there, it's kind of short, and I cracked the corner of it right on left part of my head.
Ouch.
And I didn't realize that, you know, it didn't need stitches. It just busted it, you know, good enough to where it'll bleed real bad. But, so I sat down on my cot. The dog had his own dog bed inside the cargo trailer. I locked the door and the windows was closed, but I sat there and listened. I had a shotgun. It was a Winchester with a scope on it. And I kept it loaded, but I didn't, you know, have one in the chamber. So I racked the shell in the chamber. And then I sat there and sat there. It was probably over an hour or so. And I was waiting any time for that cargo trailer to be shoved over on the only side door that I can get out. Because two doors was made like semi-trailer doors where you had two latch doors and they come down. And when you opened them, they'd swing outward to where you could get everything out of there, you know. But anyhow, I had them latched closed. So as I'm sitting there, I finally say, well, this thing is not going to come up here and I'm not taking off. I got too much stuff outside to pack up or leave here, you know. So I just waited out. And then finally I fell asleep. I woke up next morning. I'm laying on the shotgun. I'm out of shape. I'm like, oh gosh. So when I sat up on the cot, I pulled the shotgun back out, leaned it against the wall in the, by the door of the trailer. And I turned around and I could, my hair was all sticky. And I turned around and looked at the pillow and it was full of blood. And then I was like, ah, oh, that's right. I cracked my head on that doorway when I come back in here. So I grabbed the shotgun, unlocked it because I could see it was just daylight outside. And I took the shotgun and poked the door open. Like you see in the old Westerns, you see the old men with double barrel shotgun, you know, poking that door open to look outside the cabin, see who's going to be there to steal their gold.
Sure.
But anyhow, I did that and I looked around, didn't see nothing. I walked around out back of the cargo trailer and the other trailer was between me and the cargo trailer, the one that I was burning the firewood off of. Well, I walked around there, the fire was still smoldering. It wasn't at a flame, it was just smoldering, smoking. And then I walked up to, I had a fold-up table. It was just the legs, a fold-up underneath of it, plastic table there.
Right.
And I had my gold equipment out, sitting out there and everything. But I had three empty water they was all 1 gallon like milk jugs, but there was water. They was all empty, but they had been laid in place, pointing at each other, and one had the lid screwed off of it.
Oh,
and so I looked at and I was like, "Well, okay, well, here we go." Now, before this even happened, had been on the internet, you know, because I had weird things happening to me around camp there. Anyhow, every time I'd come from my house to go down there and camp and gold prospect, always happened at night. And so I went and got one of those old cassette recorders, but I mean, it wasn't that old. They sold them at Walmart still. And I was not tech savvy enough to buy a audio recorder that was, you know, where you just push play, hanging up in a tree or whatever. So I got the cassette recorder, bought a packet of cassettes. They only go, you got to go out and flip them over after they go, what, 60 minutes on one side and 60 minutes on the other side, something like that.
Right.
And this is prior to my sighting, and but it was the same summer. And I've been being messed with. So I got on the internet on my phone and was seeing all these people was habituating these creatures. This and that and the other. So I ended up going in town, getting, you know, Twizzlers and Reese cups and anything else that I think it would expire in my, my cooler, like a ham or something I had in there too long. I would take, set it out. I got some really great recordings with a nice handprint on the window of my pickup truck, which back then, you're talking, this happened in 2013. I wasn't even on YouTube then. I had a Facebook page, but I could, you know, I wasn't even a member of YouTube. I could just check out stuff on YouTube. Right. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
Just through the net. So, and anyhow, so that's what I was doing. And then it started getting even weirder to me because I opened that package of Twizzlers. I'd count how many was in there is what everybody called a gifting tree. And the Reese cups was the single individual Reese cup itself. I would set two or three of them up there in the package. Now how you buy them like for Halloween.
Yep.
And they'll get, you know, one packet of just one Reese cup.
Yep.
That's how I was buying them. And I was just setting the one packet out at a time. I mean, two to three, but they wasn't a two pack. It was just a single pack. Mm-hmm. Next morning I would get up and go out there and look, and there'd be only like a couple of Twizzlers taken out of the package, but the Reese cups, there'd be one or two of them on the ground, or the other one completely taken, gone with the package. But the wrappers was open just like we would. Humans would open it with our fingers,
right,
and just pull that wrapper apart, and then the cup took it off of it. You know, it's got that paper cup underneath of it. Mm-hmm. And then eight.
Wow.
Now at 3 o'clock in the morning is going to come around there and do that out in the country, out in the middle of nowhere. It's a mile and a half back to our camp. And it was, it's almost 3 miles from road to road. Cause we have the whole access of that river there, mm-hmm, on our lease. So, you know,
yeah. That's not likely somebody just stumbled onto your camp and had a snack.
Yeah.
Like, now, I remember when you first told me that story, and I was just amazed at how articulate that it was to unwrap and know that the candy was inside of this other stuff. You know, I mean, it's like a practiced hand. And I thought when we first talked, I was like, you know, this wasn't their first rodeo then. They'd been getting snacks before. But then you said, you brought up a really great point that perhaps they had been watching you eating them, you know, and that makes sense to me, because over and over and over, we hear from all these people that have had experiences that they believe they'd been watched for a long time before they ever realized they were there. They just had that feeling they were being watched, whether it's researchers, whether it's just people having a picnic or whatever. And so you're right. They probably would have seen that we take stuff off of these things first, and then we eat what's inside.
Right. The cassette recorder that I put out there, I hid it in my truck.
Mm-hmm.
It come with a microphone to plug into it.
Sure.
So I would open the wing window of my 1993 F-150. Feed it out through the wing window, what they call the vent window.
Mm-hmm.
Stick it and just lift up the windshield wiper and let it lay right underneath there.
Oh, perfect.
So that way it looked disguised. You couldn't see nothing.
Right.
And they did come around, and I got them. Thing of it is, I got cassette tapes strewed all around here, and I don't know which one's which. So,
yeah, the struggles of the researcher.
And there's one that I actually did a video on, of the one that was flicking my antenna that I got, one that flicked my antenna.
Wow.
And I'd get up every morning, make my breakfast and everything, set at the table where before I'd get out with my gold dredge, start dredging or anything.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd listen to the audio off of that cassette recorder. And I heard my antenna get flicked, which, unless you're 8'2", could reach over top of my pickup truck, because the only way I could set that antenna was a magnet antenna for my CB. is to open a door, stand on the rocker panel, and then reach up there and then throw it. You just kind of throw it towards the top of the pickup truck. Mm-hmm. Okay. And I'm 5'9".
Yeah.
So it got flipped. So I went running out of there, you know, just went running over to the pickup truck, looked at the window on the passenger side, and sure enough, there was a huge handprint, a handprint on the passenger side window. Mm-hmm. And what the creature must have done was just put its hand there and then reach up and flick that antenna.
Wow.
And then shortly after that, you can hear something out there urinating. Oh. Well, we had two other gold prospectors that was out there that when we had our meeting one Sunday down there, we always have it on the fourth Sunday every month down there at the gold claim. Mm-hmm. You know, and everybody will gather around for each meeting that weekend, camp out there, gold prospect, whatever. And they was down there a week before the meeting, and they tent camp, but they used a tarp put over everything. And they said they was awoken by something urinating on their canopy, which was a tarp they had over their tent.
Oh my God. Wow.
They said it sounded like a horse.
Wow.
And the smell was so putrid.
Oh, really?
They said skunky smell, mm-hmm. but it smelled like a dead animal of a person that hasn't taken a bath in months.
Oh, geez.
No. How they mentioned it at the meeting. Then everybody looked at me at the meeting going, "You ain't feeding these creatures again, are you, Jerry?" I said, "No, I haven't, I swear."
Now, I got to ask you, now that brings up an important point. And we hear this a lot in Bigfoot research. People and just people having encounters, of course, but people having those horrible stenches as being one of the signs. Now, I think that they must have like some kind of musk gland or something. And that's a stress reaction, I think. I mean, that's my hypothesis, but just based on hearing things, nothing that I've done any kind of research other than casually on my own. But what do you think that is?
Well, I'm no expert at it. I've gotten that putrid smell like maybe 6 times differently in different woods.
Okay.
But once I'm going back to the same woods, I don't get it no more, mm-hmm. but I'll still have the same activity there.
Now, let me ask you, in that case, are you noticing the scent is the same no matter how far apart it is that they all have that same scent, or is it unique to each one?
It's kind of the same scent. Okay. The one I smelled was more like a person hasn't had a bath in a few months. You know what I'm talking about?
Right.
You don't believe me, go to Walmart and stand in line.
Oh, no, you didn't.
Yeah, it's pretty bad.
Okay. But you know, I hear comparisons of like, man, it smelled like garbage and rotten meat. That's a comparison that comes up a lot, or something like that, like a horribly stinky dog and rotten something, or dead animal, or, you know, was it ever that bad when you smelled it?
The ones around me wasn't that bad.
Okay.
But think, you know, from different areas down the rivers, people live down through there, and they've got the garbage they throw out back down, like on my buddy's property. His neighbor throws it right on their property line. They don't burn their garbage or nothing. They just throw it right out there.
Wow.
Then my told me of the ones that's down on his property down there, the same thing. Said he'll get that putrid smell. Somebody hasn't had a bath but smells like garbage. I said, That's because they've got a habituation dump right there on your property.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. And that makes sense. I mean, yeah. So what you're saying is it's probably more attributed to what they're getting into than any natural scent of theirs. It's just that they can just stink sometimes.
Right.
Okay.
They can go use these rivers as like a map for them. And I do believe they come back to the same areas every spring and then in summer out through that area just to break up clans. That way they're not interbreeding, you know.
Right.
I'm sure is interbreeding somewhat within the groups. I'm not 100% positive. That's my 1% out there, and I'm no expert.
Sure.
But I do believe that they do that so that they're not, you know, intertwining to where you're getting, you know, I can't even call them clans. Okay. I don't know enough about this. I know down there at the river, they return every year.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a family group. And I've seen one juvenile, which I said on your other show, we talked about that, where I heard the stick tap that stood up, and here I thought it was a landowner's dog.
Right, right.
And it stood up and was 4 foot tall, looked like a Wookiee, you know? But I couldn't see its face or anything. Mm-hmm. It just stood up and walked straight back, and it didn't, you know, it went right back into the foliage to where I couldn't see nothing. Wow. But you got to figure, downriver from there, there's cabins, there's all kinds of houses, stuff down the river that's just downriver from us that people go there, party on weekends, throw their garbage out, and this and that and the other.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be a litter fest of habituation for these creatures, and people don't realize they're even doing it.
Right.
And sometimes people don't even believe it. Right. You know?
Yeah, there is that. I mean, there's plenty of people that just dump their garbage. Hell, I live in the north of Idaho, and I go up every once in a while. I'll go up on these old logging trails and stuff up in the mountains, and you can be 15 miles away from any town out in the deep woods, and there's still beer cans and crap out there. It's like, are you kidding me? You know, it's just people are pigs.
Oh, yeah. Just like I told you before we started the show. I was out 6 o'clock or 6:30 this morning. I left the house here. I got to Knox Lake and got there and got right on the yellow perch there.
Mm-hmm.
But fishing, and I just like a couple of days ago, I got a catfish pole because a buddy of mine, he was wanting catfish. I give him my other one.
Oh.
So, but anyway, as I'm sitting there, you know, I got my catfish pole out there. I pack out everything I pack in.
Right.
And in this spot right there where the culvert, where the lake will fill up the other side to like a pond.
Mm-hmm.
And then as the water recedes back down after we've had all this rain, it'll flow back through, and it's great for channel cat there.
Mm.
So what the heck? All this litter was all around there. There was fresh liver, because everybody, you know, everybody I know uses liver.
Right.
For fishing, chicken liver.
Mm-hmm.
Or beef liver. And but there was fresh liver right there, but there was their bags they had the liver in. There was worm cups, you know, where you buy worms, and they got the styrofoam cups with the lid over top of them, just laying there empty with a little bit of the black soil still in them.
Oh.
I'm like, people, you know, it's terrible.
It is terrible. And ladies and gentlemen, we're going to go to a quick break here. So don't go away. We'll be returning with more of Mr. Jerry Klein here on the Paranormal Portal podcast. So we'll be right back. right, everybody, we're back for more of the Paranormal Portal podcast. I'm your host, Brent Thomas, still here, still kicking. And I am joined tonight by Mr. Jerry Klein, who's a Bigfoot researcher and has had many, many experiences. And he's on the show tonight, taking us on a walk down his path of encounters and knowledge about Bigfoot. So welcome back, Jerry. You having a good time tonight?
Oh, yeah. Yep. Great
time. That's always a pleasure to have you on, and thanks for taking the time. We've been talking quite a bit about the different encounters you've had, and you've had several. It kind of seems like you're almost a Bigfoot whisperer in a way. You know? You just know where to find them.
It's not me being a whisperer. I've spent a lot of time on the internet looking at credible researchers.
Oh, okay.
There's a older gentleman, he done passed away. He went under the name Susan Ferns all the time.
Oh.
And cannot remember his name now. It's been so long ago, but I started watching his stuff on there, and he was very creative. He would take audio recorders out, same ones I've got, mm-hmm. the Olympus, and they come with a sleeve, like a neoprene sleeve.
Okay.
So they don't get wet. You can hang them upside down if you know you got a good rain coming in that night.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd see him drill them to an old dead tree in that area. He'd get great audio, but he did a lot. He set up a cargo trailer with cameras all the way around it, and he slept in a cargo trailer.
Oh.
And that's, you know, I'd already purchased my cargo trailer. I had it special ordered. Well, it's supposed to be specially ordered, and it wasn't what I got when I, you know, they said, well, we'll just knock the price down for you. But anyhow, his stuff. And then I was friends with him on Facebook. But I wasn't on YouTube then neither. And that's what I'm talking about. People just getting out, putting boots on the ground.
Yeah.
That's what me off on this too. But then I got to watching the habituation site groups. It was on YouTube and on Facebook. And then I just actually one day just looked up habituation, you know, off of Google. Just like you would an old dictionary, sure. Like when we was kids, you had to go to a dictionary, actually open it up and re-look for it. But habituation, if you look it up, it says to get to see something sooner by habituating something. So that means, so you're wanting to see a bear or a dog or a cougar or this vice versa, you're feeding something. That's what it means. And I know a lot of people on their groups too have went a lot more extent than me. They'll get out there with flutes and pies, you know. Hey, but the sad thing of that is they do it on state land, so if they're habituating these creatures and then they're gone for a long time and haven't been there. And then you got hikers coming through there.
Yeah.
And then rocks or pieces of wood or anything, or these people get harmed, or like the David Pilates on there. Sure. 4-1.
Missing 4-1. Yep.
Is it a pissed off Bigfoot because somebody was out there habituating these creatures? That's why I don't do it no more. Yeah. You know, and on your live show, we talked about my 911 call.
Yeah.
And I paid for doing it, you know.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I think that, you know, I understand people's desire to habituate and the reasons why. And it would, you know, because I guess it's a big question mark about what these things are and how smart they are. And a lot of people equate them with human intelligence, and maybe they're right. I don't pretend to know, but, you know, when you create that kind of dependence and you can't follow through, I mean, these things are, they live literally from day to day, and they've been able to do that because they have very established protocols and stuff. And once somebody comes in and breaks that, it takes them off of their balance, off of their game or whatever, because they don't think they have to do that anymore. And then when the people quit showing up, they're going hungry. And I guess it probably just gets really desperate, but it usually doesn't end well.
Right. And I've got friends right now that are not in social media, except they're just in contact with me. Okay. They've watched YouTube videos. Mm-hmm. They're saying, you're doing everything right, but can we give you a little advice about this? Now, I'm talking guys that is 60 and 70 years old that has been doing field Bigfoot research since the 1960s. Wow. Since the Patterson-Gimlin film has been aired. Okay. Wow. Mm-hmm. These guys have been all over the United States doing this. They don't want their name out there. They don't want the fame and fortune. They've had their own physical groups and not off of Facebook or YouTube or this and that. Now, they had their own physical groups where back then they had to actually get on a landline phone, call each other, say, okay, we're meeting at Brown Springs. Mm-hmm. And a lot of these researchers contacting me is here in Ohio, and that they lived down in, say, Alabama, or they was in Oklahoma, but they would all meet up with these group, with a single group, mm-hmm, of people, but they wouldn't go out there with great big lights. Back then they didn't have it. Only thing they had was a little double D battery, you know, flashlights,
right,
with the little light inside them. And these guys are telling me everything I'm doing. You know, it's like, you know, I've had people on my channel all the time. Why is it you get out, you get so much evidence? Because I get out. What you got to do.
Yeah.
But that's the reason why I have the purpose of my show up, is people that can't get out there. And I've had so many comments, people say, well, this is what's wrong with me. I wished I could get out and walk the woods again. But you do it for me. Whether you find anything or not, at least on here, I get to see the surroundings, right, you know?
Yeah.
But to get off point is, and these people here now are my mentors. Mm-hmm. I've got one guy, he Gmails me all the time on my email account or Gmail account, mm-hmm, and gives me advice. And now I'm getting ready to set up two cameras he sent me, and they're actually mounted, or they're a camera inside of a coat hanger. It looks like a coat hanger. It's got two hooks on it. He sent me two of them. One of them, I cut the bottom off of it, made it a sharp cut on the bottom of it, and I cut the hangers off of it because it's just plastic. Mm-hmm. I cut the hangers off of it. It's got a tiny little camera, but it's a 480 HP or something like that. It's a high definition little camera, and it's the size of the end of a head of a pin. And wow. I painted it the same color as concrete. And there's a certain bridge where I think that they're crossing underneath of, by the river right there. And I'm going to mount it down there, right by the bridge, to where I can take it off and put it back up, and, you know, and do it night after night. Okay. But make it look like I'm working on the bridge or something. And color is that. And I told these guys that. They said, there you go. Now you're thinking out of the box. That's something we would do instead of going out and start setting up trail cameras, because we know they don't work. Right. But the thing of it is, I did get trail camera pictures of the juveniles, but I think they just screwed up because they was juveniles. I didn't get the actual grown-ups in the picture.
Right.
You know?
Yep. No, that's excellent. And I think that's right. I think that, you know, everybody repeating everybody else's work is gleaning the same or worse results. And you really got to be innovative, because we don't really know what these things like or don't like or what they see and don't see. I know a lot of people believe that they can see the infrared spectrum. I don't know if that's possible or not. I suppose it is. There are certainly birds that can see, you know, ultraviolet and stuff. So perhaps they can, but, you know, we just don't know. So it's going to take that kind of innovation, I think, to really capture something incredible.
You're right. I think it's, when you're in a hot area, especially is in the areas we go to,
mm-hmm.
you just be sneakier about it. Place stuff around there. They actually make a rock. It's got a camera. Now, Christopher Noel has done all kinds of stuff. He actually run a camera, a landline camera, run the cable clear out there and then hit it into a dead tree. And he still didn't get no action. This tree was laying on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
Seen this like 4 or 5 years ago when he did that. But he would get sticks messed around in front of it. And, you know, this and that. Now, they knew it was there, but they saw the big eyeball that it was just a camera lens that run off of a coax that went back to an actual, say, like recorder or something. Oh. And he run the cable out there a couple hundred yards to the woods there. And which it did get messed with, but they recognized it right off.
Yeah.
And that's why I'm trying to be a little bit more sneakier. Way technology is nowadays with these smaller and smaller and smaller cameras. Mm-hmm. It's like I bought one of these old cheapo cameras and said it's this and that and the other, but it does not show that great a film. I set it on the hood of my truck last spring. It was about this time, and I went to my buddy's property, which he has now sold the property. Kenyon College now owns the property, and they have went in and decimated the woods, cleared it out. Aww. Which I had not have done. But there was a little red barn in front where I would park. It's just a tiny little storage barn, mm-hmm. red. And I got something on there. You could see a hairy arm. Seffi Cyrus on her channel, you go there and look at her channel. Seffi Cyrus actually does a stabilization of it where it's throwing rocks and sticks and stuff to pickup truck because I'd set that little camcorder on the hood of my truck while I was off in the woods
mm-hmm.
filming around, and I got a tree knock the same day and it was loud.
Ooh.
So I'm getting a tree knock over here, and then when she stabilizes it, you could see something down in the brush straight in front of the pickup truck down in there. I had my dog with me, but I think my dog was probably just laying down in the seat, went to sleep, because usually he'll alert if there's something around.
Right.
But I seen the truck move a little bit after you see the arm, and then the creature must come around that little building and then throw a rock. It looked like a rock hit the hood of the truck, bounced off, and I can see the truck shake a little bit. But that must have been my dog getting up and then looking around. Oh. But this creature hiding from behind that barn. And that's on one of my YouTube videos. I can't remember the name of it because I have so many out there.
Right.
But that one, it's not the best quality. Like I said, it was just one of the little camcorders you can hold in your hand where it's got a little, like a foam thing. It goes around your hand to help stabilize it and everything.
Oh, sure. Okay.
I still bought it, but it'll only run for like 10, 20 minutes at the most, and then it shuts down. Uh-huh. It's not my card getting full or anything. It just shuts down. It don't have a battery life to it that long.
Sure. Yeah.
Used it times just for that reason. Set it up in my dash, and, you know, something comes around there, messes with the truck while we're gone, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I can see what's going on, but That was the one and only time that I got to see actually a big hairy arm come out from around that red barn and start throwing stuff at my truck.
Man, that is really something. So now let me ask you, do you believe they can see the infrared light from some of those trail cams and stuff, or why do you think trail cams don't work? What is your thought on that?
Yeah. Now there's a lot of people. I'm not kidding you. That is the number one question people ask me all the time. They'll Gmail me all the time because I got, you know, my Gmail out there on my channel. And, if people want to buy a t-shirt or this and that and the other. So people, this is the main one thing. People get a hold of me and say, why is it they avoid trail cameras? Can they see the IR?
Yeah.
Some people think they can hear the trail camera run then. Yes, at night. You look at deer which I have hundreds of photos of deer in front of my trail cameras.
Yes.
They'll look at the camera because they're seeing the IR. I have one Browning camera here. It was a little pricey, but you can't see the IR on it.
Right.
That's the one and only camera that got those juveniles on that camera. And the one and only camera that I've got that does not have, it's a blackened out IR, and you can't see it when you're out there. I sat here in my living room after dark, tripping it to make sure it was running right and everything. And I can't even see it come on.
Right.
Click. I can hear a click, but I can't come on. Now, the thing of it is, yes, I think that they can see the IR.
Okay.
I don't think it deters them from the area, though. I think it just, okay, if my eyes is better than a human's, like, you're talking 10 times better at night, 20 times, 30 times. Okay. You're looking off and you're watching a deer walk in front of this trail camera and you're trying to be sneaky peeky around a tree and not be noticed, you know, down from this deer, it can't smell you. And you see an IR go off. And then all of a sudden you go, oh, wait a minute. Okay. There's the camera. I'm going to go out here a couple hundred yards around that and come back with it and mess with it with a stick. That is exactly my theory. I'm no expert at this, but that's how it's it. But I don't think it deters them.
Now, I had a talk with Bear, and he said something very similar. He said they know they're there because you'll catch these weird twigs and like long grasses that trigger them, and then they'll run through. Like, for instance, there's many, many series of pictures. Like a lot of these trail cams are set for like three exposures in a second, or three exposures over the period of a minute or something like that, whatever the timing is. And Bear said, it's really funny because you'll see this, you know, suddenly there'll be like an apple or something in front of the trail cam that's supposed to be the bait. And you'll see this weird weed show up in front of there. And you'll get a picture of that, and then the next picture, the apple's gone. And he said that he thought they could figure out how often it was able to take pictures and time it so that they could get the apple or whatever before it did the second exposure or third exposure.
Exactly. That's, you know, and there you go. Another researcher that's out there that's saying the same thing in character is what other researchers are saying too.
Yeah.
I did help a woman out in Loudonville, Ohio. She kept every morning
Are you there? Uh-oh, we lost him. Not sure where he went. Seems we lost his signal there. It's a poor network connection, it says. Uh-oh. Are you there?
Yes. That was our good friend Duke that was calling in on me.
Okay.
I'll call him back. But anyhow, the woman in Loudonville, she kept having her hummingbird feeders, the bottoms of them unscrewed every morning. And then the juice drank out of them. Now they have the nectar juice you can buy. Sure. It's red, but you add sugar to it.
Right.
She was having them. She had tons of them out there. And so she asked me what I could do. So I went up there and set up some dummy trail cameras around her place there, ones that I didn't have that worked anymore. Uh-huh. And I around there, and then up in the attic of my building here, on the other side of my building, was an old warehouse. A guy left a bunch of antique mirrors. They didn't have the frames around them. It's just the mirror itself.
Okay.
Set them up in various areas around those cameras. And they was all pointing towards her bird feeders. And I had them in reverse. And she's never, since then, she's never had her bird feeders messed with, her hummingbird feeders.
That's awesome. That's a great idea. And, you know,
I knew how to deter them, you know.
Right.
But.
Yeah. Now, quite frankly, I think many times people hang those things just out in the open. Like, hey, I'm going to strap this to a tree. I don't think people take, in a lot of cases, I don't think people take a lot of time trying to camouflage them. Maybe I'm wrong, but in my experience, most people just, you know, strap them to a tree and call it a day. Well, anybody can see that. So in those cases, but I do think there's something to it that they, even the well-camouflaged ones, they seem to know they're there. They seem to avoid them. And you're right. It's a great deterrent.
It won't deter them off their property, but now I asked her, the woman that had the hummingbird feeders, I said, do you ever have your house slapped or anything like that weird going on? She said, no. But she's got this huge state park, Mohican State Park, right behind her that butts right up to her backyard.
Sure.
So she said, the only thing I'm getting, you know, and they're on hangers, you know, the metal hangers that come up and loop over. Mm-hmm. You ever seen there's tons of videos out there of raccoons trying to climb those things and get onto those, any type of the bird feeders, period. Yeah. Any of them.
Yeah.
There is one. I did see a raccoon unscrewing one of those bird feeders, but it was on a wooden post. And it come up and went straight out. It was just like a post for a mailbox. Mm-hmm. But then the bird feeder was hanging underneath of it. And this raccoon got up underneath there, hung upside down where he could grip with his toenails, and unscrewed that hummingbird feeder.
Oh, wow.
All she had was all on the metal ones, where they go up and then they loop over, and then they got a hook style where they'll hook straight up. Mm-hmm. And they're, you can get them. She gets them like they're 6 foot off the ground. So there's no coon that's going to climb that tiny little piece of round metal and pole goes up or loops over and then loops back up again with a hanger on it.
Yeah.
There's no possible way that these creatures, these coons could do that. Somebody with two hands just walking right up there, unscrewing it, turning it upside down, and drinking the liquid out of it. You know?
Mm-hmm.
There's just no possible way. But I did see a video of a coon doing that with somebody that had a wooden post out there. And it looked like one that was made for a mailbox to set on, you know,
mm-hmm.
where it comes out, had the knob on top of it, and then it had the arm that went straight out, and then they had the hanger sticking, or the feeder sticking straight down underneath of it, and this hung on with his back feet, and then just twisted off the whole bottom of it. Wow. And then it took the feeder up to its mouth, and it's spewing all over the place. But sitting there and getting all the sweet nectar out of there, you know.
Yeah, and if a coon can do that, I just imagine how much more a Bigfoot could do. Yeah. But, brother, that about wraps up our show, and I really appreciate you coming on again and being a part of the podcast universe as well with us. Can you let people know how to stay in touch with what you're doing?
Yeah. My YouTube channel, it's Jerry Klein, or you can get a hold of me at my Gmail account, which is jerryklein85@gmail.com, all lowercase. And thank you again, Brent, for having me on your show.
Oh, for sure. And your YouTube channel is just, is it youtube.com/Jerry Klein?
Yep, that's all it is. It's just Jerry Klein Bigfoot. And they get on there and just look up Jerry Klein Bigfoot or look up Knox County Bigfoot Organization, because I go under that on all, you know, on my thumbnail. So Knox County Bigfoot Organization, Ohio. And it'll pull right up, or with my name. There is some old videos I used to do of drag racing, Jerry Klein, and I had them out there. There ain't that many of them. So, just discarded them.
That's good times, brother. But
I thank you for letting me have you, letting me on your show. Again.
No, man, it's a great pleasure. I always enjoy our conversations, and I always learn something new every time we talk. So thank you so much for being here and helping us entertain the folks, and we'll definitely have you back, brother, anytime.
Yep, thank you very much.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for tuning in, and be sure to check us out on Facebook, facebook.com/paranormalportalradio. Check us out on YouTube, youtube.com/paranormalportal, and find us on Twitter. Give us a tweet, and special thanks to Revolver Podcasts for making all of this possible. So take care, everybody. Be good, be kind, be nice, be good to each other, help each other out, find the magic in every day, and remember to laugh as much as you can. Everybody, good night, and I'll be back soon.
Hi, this is Don with Paranormal Portal. Thank you for checking out our Paranormal Portal podcast. If you like what you heard, please subscribe to our YouTube channel. That's youtube.com/paranormalportal. And follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/paranormalportalradio.
sports betting is sweeping across the country faster than the coronavirus, and Wagering Week is your antidote. I'm Tom Barton, and I'm a veteran sports analyst and respected sports handicapper who helped build ESPN's brand. I've been recognized and awarded by Pro Football Weekly and Gaming Today magazine as the honest handicapper. Let the other guys give you the same old boring sports talk with the same tired storylines. We'll give it to you straight here every Friday on Wagering Week. Don't gamble with other podcasts. Let Sports Garden Network's Wagering Week help your bottom line.